This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, welcome, boys and girls. That's correct. It is already through mid-February. Those of you who had a happy Valentine's Day, congratulations. Those of you who spend Valentine's Day at home in your icy cabin watching romantic DVDs, I'm in full understanding. All right, let's get on to today's program, environmental architecture, and where we stand with that. Some really interesting new products that are helping us and teaching us to be more green in the way we live and the way we build. Let me turn on all the proper buttons. We'll test some sound and introduce our guests for today. Let's see, over in the far corner, we have Deb Brown. Deb, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
And your official title?
I'm an account manager. I work for Ambic Building Systems. It's a manufacturer of insulated concrete forms.
And we'll explain exactly what insulated concrete forms are as we go through the hour.
Wonderful.
But they are one of the new products to help build in a more environmentally sound way and save energy, et cetera, correct?
Absolutely. It's a great way to build the envelope of your structure, whether it's your home or a commercial building, for your foundation and your upper walls. Super insulated, great sound barrier.
Now, you live here in town?
I live in Afton.
Mm-hmm. Live in Afton. All right. That's a good place where you would need some insulated products.
Yes.
next to you, we have, and here we're going to challenge my notorious reputation for mispronunciations, Betsy Rettger. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. All right. You got to get close to that microphone now. I know we're forcing you to share, but that is your husband next to you, so don't be shy about your personal aura. Betsy Rettger, professor of architecture at the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of classes are you teaching?
I teach an undergrad studio, and although it's just a beginning studio, over time, the whole sustainable issue has just been integrated in the curriculum. So even though it's at a very early stage, we still talk about all of these issues. And actually, both my husband and I went to school when the Green Dean, William McDonough, had come in. So we're sort of the era where it was new, and now it's, you know, we've sort of seen the progression of how it's infiltrated, and it's pretty much mainstream in the school culture at this point.
Okay, yeah, I want to get into that a little later in the hours, is how devoted the university itself is to teaching it, and then practicing what we're going to talk about today. Next over, Bob Penio.
That's right.
You are a local architect and developer.
That's right.
Now, so you don't just draw up the plans, you then help build them as well.
Yes, my career first started as a builder, and I got so interested in the process of building that architecture seemed to be the next step. And since then, I've been doing a lot of development work, so I'm actually designing, developing, and building a lot of the projects that I do.
Okay. Finally, tucked away in the corner, where I have to move to see, Mark Greenfield. Now, Mark, you are a contractor who specializes in some of the green items, such as the ICF that's already been mentioned.
Exactly. I'm an ICF subcontractor to other builders and contractors and homeowners. I specialize specifically in ICFs.
I'm curious, what makes you specialize in something of that sort? I mean, because to me, anyway, it seems that these are all, maybe not all, because I know that this program here on Wake Up Call, we've done previous shows on environmentally sound building. We did a show on one of the schools that I guess was one of the first in the area to get an LEED certificate. But to take your career, to take your income and devote it to something that to many people, I guess, the average public, still seems to be new and growing. Is that because you, is that more of a personal issue where, hey, this is the person I want to be? Or is this a, you know, hey, this is where contracting is going to go eventually, and so let's get in early, and I can learn about it when everyone else is learning about it and be the expert on it soon.
Well said, Rick. That's exactly right. It is personal, because as a tradesperson or somebody that works with your hands, you have some pride in your craft and such, and so, yeah, when you see what's built and how it's built, you want to do it to the best of your abilities. But it also, when I was choosing a business, it's rolling. Insulated concrete forms, sustainability, the green build movements on the roll. And so I wanted to be up front, and I wanted to be on top of it. And insulated
concrete.
Isn't it nice
when something that fulfills you personally also tosses some money in your wallet at the same time? That feels good, doesn't it?
That is neat. I like that.
I'd like to learn more about that, because it ain't working for me. Everything that I like to do is always in the low-paying craft. I really need to take some pointers on that. You and I will have to meet after work. All right, so we are going to talk today about environmental architecture, green growing in the commercial and residential side of things. With Mark Greenfield, subcontractor specializing in ICFs, which are a part of this, a particularly fairly new item. Deb Brown, who works for a company that helps sell these things and provide them to the architects and the contractors. Betsy Redker, professor of architecture at the university, and Bob Pineo, who's a local architect and developer. I did that again, didn't I? I even wrote it down in the proper form.
I like your pronunciation better than mine.
I'm sure your mother would love that.
International sound.
I even wrote it down and read it incorrectly. And people wonder why I host this show. It's so that you know that you are better than me, and I provide that hour of ability. All right, let's jump off. I want to know what officially makes a green building. There's something called an LEED, right? I'd like you, someone, whoever wants to jump up and grab this easy question, throw the softball out first. LED, LEED, what does it stand for? And what qualifies as a green building these days?
I'll answer that for you. LEED is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. That's what the acronym stands for. There's several criteria that builders can go by to qualify for LEED. Basically, LEED is it's a guideline on how to build green with green products, sustainable products. And there are lots of different initiatives out there. There's certainly LEED is one of them. Earthcraft is another. Energy Star. There are several.
So there are different groups that will give you a certificate for following. Are they different requirements to get that certificate different groups?
Yeah, they're different requirements, but they all kind of relate to one another. If you are able to qualify for Energy Star, you're well on your way to Earthcraft building as well as LEED. So there are lots of different movements out there to give builders and homeowners incentives to build green, more energy efficient, and sustainable.
Let me jump in real quick. I want to ask Bob and Mark, do your building and your design for LEED or for any of the other groups that Deb mentioned?
Well, here's when I first read the LEED, some of the classifications for LEED, or what you need to do to qualify for it. To me, as a builder and an architect, it's an incredibly intuitive process where, you know, a lot of the qualifications and the recommendations are just good building practices. And for example, the building code there's a funny saying, if you do anything less, it's against the law. So, you know, in other words, LEED is a lot of practical, good building processes that you would follow to build a good house. So it isn't as scientific as it probably sounds. It's just, how do you manage groundwater? How do you orient a house? How do you deal with your material waste? How do you deal with picking materials?
Then why is it so special? And I don't mean that in any sort of negative way, but it just seems like if it has that much sense of being, and I can't even think of the word to use, but of just knowledgeable, easy to follow, sensible facts in your profession, why aren't 90% of the homes and businesses and buildings built this way?
I think they will be. I think that there's a couple things that are lacking.
Did we only discover this sort of sensibility in the last few years, and that's why all the other buildings aren't done this way?
No, I think the big thing was that the building code is a prescriptive code. It tells you exactly what to do, where the LEED is more about picking and choosing. You can't do all of it because it's, you know, if you did every initiative, it would probably, you know, the cost would be too much for any particular project. But you can look at independent pieces, and you can pick and choose which one is most appropriate for your site, most appropriate for your program, most appropriate for whatever you're building. So it's much more, you can excel in different parts of how you're going to design the building, how you're going to build it, or how you're going to fit it out. So all of those programs relate to some piece of that. Energy Star, for example, looks at appliances. Big part of that, or energy usage.
Yeah, Energy Star, is that the one that gives me my yellow strip on the front of my refrigerator when I go to buy it at Lowe's or something?
Right, mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. I guess I wanted to mention that I had worked up in Massachusetts on some LEED projects that were large university buildings, university libraries, and LEED for residential is fairly new. So I think that people haven't really caught on to that, because it is relatively new. They were starting with larger building projects, and now have seen that it can help apply to smaller projects. But another thing about it, I think one of the reasons at least the universities were using it is it's a marketing tool. You know, they have this, LEED certification that they can show. You know, there's an actual certificate you get, and so it's not like just being able to say, well, we're trying to produce green buildings. They have, you know, something they can show that actually gives them that certification. So I think that's one reason some clients like it, that they have a sort of product that they can say passed all of these guidelines, rather than just saying we're doing it in good practice and not having any specific sort of outcome or marketability to it.
All right, Deb. I was going to say that there is an inspection process, and the builders and the folks constructing this project are held accountable. So that's part of it, too. People want to know. It's one thing for me to say, oh, geez, that's great. I built it really right for you. And then it's another thing for people to know that you did. Mm-hmm. They have something they can see and read about and have an inspection that says that it was actually done.
Mm. All right, Deb, I want to toss this back to you because I let you answer number one of my question, but not number two. Bob said that part of the steps that allow you to be a green building, groundwater and where you set the building. But what are some of the other things that are they the same for commercial and residential buildings? Standards?
Basically. I mean,
What are some of them?
Well, the five key areas for evaluation of LEED are sustainable site development, water
savings.
What
does that mean?
Orientation of the building.
So that it gets the most sun? Is that
certainly
what that means?
Yeah, the most solar gain. You might also, Bob, as a developer, you might want to jump in as far as the...
Well, the least amount of impact on the site
right,
as well.
Soil and...
So you don't have to... to levy every tree in the area.
Right,
and,
correct.
Mm. In urban buildings, they also have a portion, you know, if you put a shower in your project so that people can ride their bikes and, you know, shower and go to work, or the approximate distance to a bus stop or a public transit. So there's, you know, that's what you're saying. Bob was saying about it being flexible. There's all these little pieces. So in the end, you accumulate a certain number of points. So whether you're saving trees or you're in an urban condition and you provide a place to change clothes when you ride your bike, you know, you can sort of pick and choose, you know, depending on the project you're working on.
Mm. Right. Other points? I mean, I'm sure it's more than groundwater and sites that site sustainability.
Certainly. Go ahead. Well, I was going to mention, as far as sites are concerned, you know, they look at things like water runoff from rain, stormwater management. That's where products like pervious concrete comes into play, where it drains naturally. That way you don't have to have stormwater ponds on, or if you do have to have one, it's maybe smaller. But, you know, other areas for LEED are water savings, energy efficiency, material selection, and certainly indoor environmental quality. So all of those are key issues as far as evaluation by LEED.
Now, put all four of you on the spot, or I guess three, since I have a couple here. Does everybody live in a what qualify as a green home?
No.
Not now, but we're the reason we were brought in, we're in the process of building our own home in town. And that's how we met these people, were using the ICFs. So we hope to be living in one within a few months.
All right, Deb and Mark?
Well, I'm certainly in the design process. I would love to build another home. I've built one before. I'd love to build one. This was the house I built 13 years ago. Certainly was using sustainable methods, but I've learned so much more since then. And of course, ICFs are my choice to build my next home.
Mark,
I live in an older home, so it wouldn't be considered a sustainable house. But a lot of the initiatives is a part of LEED and Earthcraft are. Like Bob was saying, just simple things that you should do anyway, like sealing up large holes and making sure that your air infiltration is down and such. So you could do that in an older home as well as a newer home.
Can you renovate an older home to be a green home?
Certainly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, things like the type of light fixtures that you use, light fixtures and even the actual bulb, whether it be halogen or fluorescent rather than incandescent. There again, Mark touched on sealing up penetrations, even right down to putting gaskets behind your outlets to reduce the amount of air that comes through your electrical outlets, which, go home, check it out. Put your hand up against the outlet, see how breezy it is.
I live in a cabin, I put my hand up against my wall.
So, yeah, you can definitely retrofit your existing house. Low flush toilets, low shower heads, water usage, anything like that.
All right, so you may not be able to easily install something like an ICF, which right. We're going to get into as one of the more major new products for green homes, but there are other things that you can do to have a dramatic impact in terms of reducing your impact
right.
on things.
Absolutely.
All right.
This is the part of the LEED certification is that, as Betsy was saying, you accumulate points and there are, you know, you have a platinum certification and
gold, silver.
And that's all a question of how many of those credits you get and how many of these steps that you take. But anybody can change, you know, as Deb was saying, a light bulb or, you know, there's so many different ways of you know, being more sustainable that that's what's the great part about, I think, this whole discussion is that it's becoming so mainstream that everybody knows at least a little bit of what they can do. And before, you know, maybe we didn't know as much as we do now.
All right, 11:19 here on the wake-up call. Bob Penio, Betsy Rettger, Deb Brown, Mark Greenfield, all in here talking about environmental architecture and green buildings. Feel free to dial us up. Catherine is back. I know she left for a little while, but Catherine is back producing the show today. So call up, say hi to Catherine, get patched on through to ask a question. or make a comment. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Let me let you know the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy and windy today. It's 30 to 35. Mostly clear tonight. Lows 15 to 20. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs 40 to 45. A mix of sun and clouds throughout the listening area. 30 in the valley, 32 in Lynchburg, 37 in Richmond, 33 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, we want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They are now featuring travel gear from Eagle Creek, including duffels, travel packs, and accessories. And if your travel gear is taking you somewhere warm, Blue Ridge has the sandals from Teva and Reef, plus quick-drying warm weather stuff from the North Face and Ex Officio. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen and at BRMS.com. And we also want to thank listeners like Dewey Keaton, Rebecca Campbell, and Jill Green for contributing to the Fall Fun Drive. It's because of people like them that you have the Wake-Up Call on Sunday mornings. It's also because of program underwriters like Atlas Comics and Market Street Wine Shop. So stay tuned to tell a friend about, Les Temps Purdue, which comes up at noon. Another programming you enjoy here on WNRN. And be sure to support us in the upcoming Fun Drive this spring. All right, boys and girls, dial up 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. I got lots of questions, but you can throw in one or two of yours if you'd like. Betsy, question to you. You teach at the university.
Yes.
You mentioned how one of your current classes, sustainability, et cetera, is something that is incorporated into that. I'd like you to talk about what the university does in terms of pushing, makes it sound a little hard, but suggesting that this sort of work be included in the classrooms, as well as how well the university does on its own in terms of practicing this sort of architecture.
Well, one point to make is I think the university as a whole is just becoming more interested and more aggressive in these initiatives, whereas the architecture school specifically has been taking this on for over 10 years now. So for us, it's good practice. It's almost not even discussed as that we need to include it in the curriculum. It's just there at this point. Every course has some relation to the effect on the environment.
So it's not like global warming where you have a variety of architectural professors who are pushing for, you know, for green housing, and then you've got a handful of people who are saying this is totally unnecessary.
Correct. I think across the board, everyone agrees that this is a great movement and is researching and finding new ways to push it within our discipline of building. The landscape architects within our department, they're also working on this, the planners. So I think as a school, we're sort of the leaders within the university to push them. And recently, there's been a lot of news out on campus building and rating the systems that they're using in the buildings that they're building themselves on campus.
Grounds,
yes. And
sorry, as an alum, I had to throw that in there.
And so UVA is definitely trying to improve in the next coming years. They're actually going to start using the LEED system, which is a major change. So
really,
it's really
they will be using that for all new university contracted products.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know 100%, but they're pushing for that in the next few years. So that's great progress, I think.
Okay. Do you know of any current architectural professors who step forward in this fielding? Because you mentioned the Green Dean. He's not at the university anymore, is he?
He's not. He's busy running his practice.
Has anyone sort of stepped up in his role?
Yes. I think our current dean is obviously continues this trend, but there's a few key professors. One I could mention, John Qualley at our school, who does a design build project, and he actually has students building the most energy efficient homes possible in town. And they're also looking at the question of affordability. So they've been, I think they're up to their third home now that they're working on.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a little bit, but let's take a call. Everybody ready? We got Ann from Scottsville. Hey, Ann. Ann? All right, well, dial back. Let me make sure that we got I got what I want here. Oh, I know what I did. Hey, the phone works. Mm-hmm. I promise. And if I cut you off because that's something I did, dial back 979-0919. If it was you just choosing not to talk, well, don't call back. all right, there goes the phone line. So that generally proves that it's me and my lack of button use. How expensive is it to build a greenhouse? What percentage does it add to the cost of your building?
Well, I mean, the old adage saying it takes green to be green. Typically, new innovative products are a bit more expensive. I know with ICFs, it really depends on where you are geographically, how much you pay for steel and concrete, how much you pay for labor. But you know, we can confidently say that a building with ICFs as the envelope, now I'm talking about the foundation and all the upper walls, exterior walls, could be anywhere between 2% and 7% more than conventional as far as the cost. But you recoup that very quickly. I mean, the ICFs provide 30% to 50% in energy savings in your heating and cooling. You know, it's a fire-resistant building, so you're in homeowner's insurance, so certainly reflect that, as well as it's a very durable, strong building, too. I mean, it's fire-resistant as well as very resistant to storms.
All right, let me take this call from Ann, and then I want to come back and talk more about ICFs because of what they do and sort of to explain to people a little bit more of what they are and how they work. Ann, I don't think I screwed up this time. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. You just answered my first question. I had two, and the first one was about affordability and what it costs, what it adds to the cost of a new home. But my second question has to do with wind power. I've been reading a bit about people putting up windmills and Virginia Tech able to help some people, I guess, down in their area. And we were wondering about the feasibility of a windmill for power.
All right, Ann, I'm gonna hang up and let you listen on the radio, okay?
Okay.
All right, what is the feasibility of putting up a windmill and using that in terms of being part of the green plan for your home? Who wants to jump into that?
Well, I think this, I'd jump into, I'm by no means know that much about wind manufacturing, but one question was how much does a green building cost? And it's a really, really, that's a tough question to kind of grapple with, but and because it depends on what you do. I mean, if you do voltaic cells and, you know, if you do solar heating and, you know, it depends on which one of the...
And how far you go and which one of the things off the list you're picking.
Exactly. And one of the first things I'd say is, this relates back to what architects do, is we look at the house or the building or whatever we're designing, how it relates to its site and how it relates to the sun. And you know, in some areas, in some climates, you want a lot of sun to come into your house so it can passively heat your house. And others, you don't. You want to, you know, in hot, arid climates, you don't want that sun to come in. So it all depends on how you manipulate. I think the cheapest way of doing green building is passive design. So you're using using your surroundings to benefit the climate and the intention of your design.
Explain that a little more to those of us who don't get those words.
It's like passive solar design, for example. You orient in a climate where you want, in a cold climate, you want to orient a lot of your glass towards the south face, so that you're just captivating the heat that's generated from the sun. So these are passive means that you're not utilizing mechanical equipment and you know, things that systems that run on energy. You're just using the either sun or wind or you know, shading, all sorts of things that you can implement at the site design level. So as far as relating to cost, you know, that's a very efficient way of doing it.
I could respond to the caller. We looked at using geothermal for our house, and I know that that's one of the systems similar to wind power. It's one of
is that when you, what do you, with geothermal, you build it into the side of the hill?
Right. You're trying to dig a well deep enough to get down to the groundwater that's always at a constant temperature. So then you can use that for your heating and cooling instead of having to use so much energy. A heat pump or something.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's not going to work. We have a very small lot in town. But there are some systems that I think will become better for residential, but right now are affordable for, let's say, a university. So on grounds, because so many buildings can use a wind turbine or geothermal, right now that's more efficient than, say, building your own wind turbine that would just facilitate your one house. So that's, I'm not sure on the cost, but I know some of the technology, I think, probably it's more affordable to a larger population that are all sharing the benefits rather than each house using their own system.
Well, the other part of that, too, is that it depends on the economies of scale, how many, you know, like photovoltaics right now, if they could produce it at a much larger level or output, then they could offer it at cheaper prices. So we're seeing those price curves come down and the affordability of some of these technologies coming within reach.
All right, let's take a call from from Gordon. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. What you got?
Well, I recently have been building a home, and we put in geothermal heating and cooling. We actually dismantled and moved the home and rebuilt it using sustainable designs. And we used to live in a 1,200 square foot home that wasn't very energy efficient. And our over 3,000 square foot home, our bill is less than it was there. And so through geothermal, through on-demand gas hot water heat, it's been great.
Awesome.
All right, man. Thanks for the tip.
I was wondering, can you still apply for leads if your house is already completed?
I'm not sure that you can. I don't know, though.
All right.
I'd just recommend him going to the website and checking it out, because I know with new homes, it was the deadline is going to be January 1st, 2008. But is anything built between December 31st, I think that was 05, to 2008? So check out the website of theirs. There are some incentives maybe for you as a homeowner.
Yeah, Gordon, do you get any tax break?
I haven't really since I moved the house. I can't get historic tax breaks, but I'm trying to look into the ones for the energy savings with all the energy efficient appliances.
Right. Does anybody on the panel know about tax break possibilities?
Well, there may be.
I read something. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. I thought I saw something about $500 for something.
Well, it may be through Energy Star or the IRS has some tax benefits for energy efficient building. You have to be able to prove that you were able to save 50% in your energy versus what your conventional house was. So just check out the website for Energy Star and the IRS.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks, Gordon.
Yep.
Just on that topic, I know for our own house, I was looking at the Department of Energy website. And so some of this, I think it's just interesting to note that there's a lot of political sort of process that needs to catch up as well. So you look down through the list of states, and Virginia had one link, whereas California had a whole host of links that were directing you to different tax incentives. So some of this, I think, obviously is becoming more mainstream and hopefully will need to be integrated into the political discussions to get some of that more tax incentives approved.
All right. Yep. 11:35 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about green buildings, environmental architecture, with Mark Greenfield, Deb Brown, Betsy Redker, and Bob Pennio. That's twice now I got that proper. We want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support today. Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and they're open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the downtown mall, all here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E guys.com. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks.
Hey, Rick?
Yes?
Can I go back and address Ann's question about wind generation and other ways to produce power for your home?
Sure. Chris, hang on, Chris. Go on, Mark.
Sorry about that.
No.
When you're looking at those type of things, the cost can be huge. And like wind generation produces, say, DC power. So you have to have ways to store that power and such. Whereas there's other ways, there's bigger bang for your buck. So that's kind of what Bob was alluding to with like the LEED certification. There's lots of, it's a menu that you get to pick and choose from. Wind generation could certainly be something there, but the cost would be huge probably.
All right. Let's take our call. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We got Chris from Frostburg, Maryland, listening online. All right, Chris, what you got?
I was wondering if any of you could comment on the materials used to construct these greenhouses, what the impact will be years down the road when these houses are have to be torn down and things like that. The disposal of some of the products that are used to make the houses greener. What is going to be the environmental impact years down the road when you have to destroy these houses?
Chris, let me ask you a quick question. Are you calling because you think because you know that they're great on the impact, or because you want to know, hey, is this stuff going to have some sort of negative impact in the landfill?
I'm actually an environmental scientist, so I was wondering, is it going to have some negative impact later down the road when we have to dispose of them?
All right. Can you keep listening online if I hang up?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for the call. We love the Maryland people as long as you're not rooting for the Terrapins.
Oh, definitely not. Cavaliers all the way.
There you go. Thanks, man.
All right.
All right. Somebody take that one. What happens when you... What is the impact of these materials... post-life?
Well, I think this is a complicated question. There's so many materials that, you know, obviously go into a building. So, some are much better. And these days, part of the LEED certification is, you know, how can these materials be recycled when it's time to recycle them, when it's time to move on to the next usage of the building? How easy is it to sort of reconfigure these things? You know, in terms of ICF, there's pros and cons to every product. And
Let me stop you just a second, Betsy. Because we keep talking about ICF, and I think, and I probably should have tossed this out much earlier, but ICF is an insulated concrete form, and it is when concrete is used to, I mean, you make a form from it so that it can be poured into a wall or a floor or a ceiling or a corner, correct?
That's correct. It is a expanded polystyrene form. It's held together with polypropylene webs. And it is a form for a concrete wall. You know, lots of times people say, I cannot believe that we're building a house now out of styrofoam and plastic. Well, you're not. You're not building it. The structure is poured concrete and reinforced with steel. And that is your structure. The EPS is your insulation. So basically, when you're pouring these walls, when you're building with ICFs and you pour it full of concrete, you're getting the structure and the built-in insulation, and also you've got your furring strips and your studs right there. So it's more of a one-step process.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to, because we want to keep more information on that for people. But Betsy, I just felt like I had allowed it like 10 times for us to talk about ICFs, and people were going, Did I miss that part? What the heck was that?
And so, I brought that up because I think that's what he's probably asking about specifically, just because there's so many, obviously, right, products that we could talk about that, you know, all have pros or cons in terms of their afterlife. And so this is a tricky one because the hope is that these houses will be around for so long because they're more durable, that this issue hopefully wouldn't be as important as it would in a house that maybe only lasts 10, 20 years and then is replaced. There's a lot more energy savings with the ICF. And so you just have to weigh these things, I think. And then in your total house, you know, maybe by using the polystyrene in the insulated forms, maybe you, that might, you know, it's not going to degrade as well as some other products. Maybe other places in the house you use products that don't have sort of the chemical basis or toxins in them. And then you sort of balance all of this out throughout the house. So I think that's what's really difficult about the green design. There's no perfect product. They all have pros and cons. If you even think about shipping, shipping a product uses gas, you know, adds to the pollution of the environment. So there's so many sort of nitpicky little pieces that you can get bogged down in that. I think it's a good question. It's a really difficult question.
All right. Nick, you were on the line and chose to hang up. I don't know if that was because I extended the conversation with the guests. Feel free to dial back if we didn't answer your question. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Wake-up call today is talking about the green buildings, environmental architecture, with Deb Brown, Betsy Redker, Mark Greenfield, and Bob Pinio. Dial us up, boys and girls.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, Charlottesville hands down a verdict in its first capital case in a decade. Courtney Stewart tells the story of a woman killed just when she was seeking freedom from her husband. The long-running case of George and Elisa Robinson, sentenced behind bars in 2003 for serving beer at a teen party. They want to take their case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Albemarle County Sheriff Ed Robb announces his retirement. Then one day later, Charlottesville Police Captain Chip Harding announces that he wants the job. What do you think? The Hook, celebrating all of our presidents this Monday, even Martin Van Buren. And we want to thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. I don't know where that cough came from. And don't be going anywhere, because at noon, George Bell will be here for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Huey Lewis, no Kaja Goo Goo, no Loverboy. But you will hear Dead Milkman and Chalk Farm. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. This is my latest one, Catherine. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Chris.
Hey, I work for a local land surveyor, and I'm involved with a lot of projects that we're talking about today. I think it's a great program, and I hope the past, you know, will not interfere with the future too much in building. I think these people are great, and they're doing a great job with being very detail-oriented, because building is a very, very detailed process. I don't have too many detailed questions for such a short time, but I was interested if any of these folks had studied or read about the Morrow School of Building that I believe was started in the early 70s, possibly the late 60s.
I've heard of that, and I'm trying to place, it's not the one that, I guess that's Yestermorrow, that's up in Boston.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. It's in Vermont?
I think so.
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's all. I know that it's a great program, and I know that there are a lot of programs that have sort of been modeled after that. There's, you know, UVA is doing this EcoMod program that's for college students, but I know, you know, Auburn has a really great design build studio. There's a lot of summer programs that have been popping up that are more focused towards college students. And I think the one that you're talking about is for high school students or a younger age. But I think that that's just a wonderful program because in architectural education, anytime you can get any hands-on experience, I think it's a lot easier to understand all of this than, you know, just learning on paper.
Correct. I would love to see something implemented here further south. And it's great that one of you at least did know about this, and I was just wondering if you were involved with it at all, because I'd heard Massachusetts come up. I'm definitely from here. I've been my whole life. But I guess I could talk forever with you guys, so I better go.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, guys. Bye.
By the way, when we... hopefully we'll get this podcast and set up www.seavillepodcast.com. Later on, you can usually go to iTunes and search WNRN and find the show there. We'll try and toss in a few links as well for people to to do their own research on it, because like Chris said, we'll never get all this done in an hour. Just a quick answer, because Fred is on the line. ICF, so these insulated concrete forms, can you get them in Charlottesville, or do you have to go, you know, are these like a big city, big firm kind of thing?
No, you can get them in Charlottesville. Actually, Allied Concrete and Allied Ready Mix are our distributors here in Charlottesville. Anvik is a manufacturer of insulated concrete forms, and we're actually located in Toronto. That's our headquarters.
Wow.
But we have a molder in Charlotte, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. So it's within... you know, 500 miles.
So that's going to cut down on the cost of it, is because you do have somebody. Okay, that was a question. All right, Fred from Waynesboro. Hey, Fred.
Morning.
Hey.
I have a question for you. I live in an older home with hot water heat and oil-fired boiler, and of course, with the cost of oil, I was looking for alternatives. And the heat pump option was too expensive, but what I decided to do was to use off-peak power. And just got some of the electric space heater, you know, electric oil-filled radiators in each room. And, you know, off-peak power is so inexpensive, and mm-hmm. it's really worked out great. So I'm curious for your thoughts on the use of off-peak power.
And for whoever chooses to answer that, let's define off-peak power. For those of you who weren't listening 3 weeks ago when we did a show where that term came up. So who's going to grab that question?
I mean, I know a little bit about it in that I've seen it used in more commercial buildings. But as far as I know, it just means that you are, you know, in the evenings, the power usage is low when people go to sleep, so that you can take your energy from that time period rather than competing during the day when obviously there's more energy consumption going on. Mm. I'm not aware of how it's used around here in terms of residential use, but it seems like a really great opportunity. A pretty simple process just to be able to spread that usage throughout the day.
All right, Fred, thanks, man. And good luck with making your house and turning it green.
Well, that's sort of my question. I'm using a massive amount of electricity now just with resistive heating. But it's just so inexpensive because I'm using it at off-peak times, and so I was wondering how that was viewed to heat sort of in an inefficient way and use up a lot of electricity but use it at off-peak times.
So is that a green thing or a LEED selection on to get the certificate?
I would say the problem with that is that you're still, you know, somewhere down the line, there's a power plant that's making that power. Now that the company can sell it to you cheaper, it has more to do with market rates. You know, as Betsy was saying, somebody's competing for that. But as far as a produce, you know, let's say a sustainable approach, it would be you're still using the same amount of wattage. And the difficult part is that, especially with space heaters, I would imagine, that the heat dissipates quite quickly, so you'd need something that's going to capture that heat at night and then allow it to dissipate during the day when you need it.
So the fact that that Fred is saving money personally doesn't really make it a green home or viewed as green by those in the business.
Well, he's still using probably the same amount of electricity, just purchasing it at when it's cost less. But you know what he needs to look at is how to seal up his house so it'll be more airtight, increase insulation in his exterior walls and his attic. The types of light bulbs used, putting timers on fixtures, small things like that make a huge difference.
All right.
Rick, I think one thing that I keep wanting to think about is that there's a growing consciousness of how we've lived for the last, let's say, 100, 150 years, that we're beginning to look at how we use energy, how we build houses, how we build factories, all the environment that we live in. So that consciousness is beginning to say, I think basically because there's less energy, we're using more of it, and we're finding out that all of these systems are putting are worsening our environment, right? So consciously, we're all looking at ways of the first question is, what have we done? And your question was, one of your questions was, any of you live in a house that is green, right, or sustainable? And a lot of us don't, because we're just catching up on it, and it's a very time consumptive. It's going to take several generations to get to the point where we're all living in more sustainable housing, and it'll keep on getting better and better. But the consciousness this new consciousness is asking the questions, and by doing that, we're looking at our environment and finding out what we've done wrong and what the solutions are.
Mark, I want to ask you a couple questions. Because we keep talking about ICFs and concrete, and Deb said, that a lot of people are going, I can't believe that we're building the house out of concrete. Because to me, when I'm thinking about this, I can think of both advantages and disadvantages to this, and I want you to sort of, as a subcontractor who specializes in using it, to give me the facts on it. Because the first thing that comes to mind is concrete is not very flexible. So does this mean that you can only use it in certain regions? I can't imagine using it in California. My mental vision is that of an earthquake, causing your house to break into small gravel parts.
Actually, that's probably just the opposite of what's true. You can design concrete and reinforce concrete for all kinds of conditions. So in California, they would build for seismic loads and earthquakes and such. Now, concrete, reinforced concrete, is very, very, very strong. And what makes it work really well is the thermal mass. It's kind of like a log cabin. Why does a log cabin work? Because it's heavy. And once you get it to a certain temperature and you store that heat, it stays there. The temperature swing isn't near as quick. So concrete, once you get it to, say, if you're ideal temperature is 72, once you get it there, it stays there reasonably easy compared to a wood wall or some lesser, lighter weight wall.
Now, I can see where it would be great for, Deb, did you say fire? I mean, I can see where, a fire problem is not going to concern
you. Sure. Well, concrete has lots of advantages.
But why should I use an ICF?
You want my, you're asking for a sales pitch.
The reason. I'll give you 60 seconds to sales pitch me on ICF.
Well, the reason is, Deb alluded to this earlier. You have your insulation. It's super insulated. Very, very insulated. You have very little air infiltration. You have the thermal mass. The thing has a moisture barrier, has a sound barrier. It's built, I built 5 houses for a private not-for-profit here not long ago, and those 5 houses were built for 100 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of you folks are with AHIP, right? Albemarle Housing.
Yeah, well, we all have our AHIP badges on. Yep, okay. I worked for AHIP. Deb worked for AHIP.
Yeah, so this isn't a sales pitch for ICF. This is how we help the community thing.
Well, that's right. How do you do things better? How do you make it better for people and better for all of us? That's why all 4 of us are sitting here, is that we're concerned about a lifestyle that is better for our children and those to come. that we aren't just going to use up all the resources all at once.
And we chose it because we're designing, building, and owning a house that we're going to build for ourselves. And the ICF was so flexible, and so it met so many of our design criteria. And the things you can do with it, the builders, we're using alloy builders in Charlottesville, and they're great because they talk about that it's like using Legos. You know, that it's a childhood dream, and all you have to do is put these pieces together and then fill the cores, and you can do almost anything with it.
That's
just
true.
A great product.
It really is adult Lego blocks.
All right, let me jump to this because I've got I got like three things to do in about 4 minutes. So hang on, caller. I do want to remind everyone you are listening to the Wake Up Call here on WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. I think Deb wanted to point out that this week's Hook also has a vote on Board of Architectural Review votes, and it's titled Green Monster. So make sure to pick up this week's Hook, aside from the other things that I mentioned, and look at that. We'll take the call first, and then I have a question from someone who called in just to pass their question on. Andrew here in Charlottesville. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Great, man.
Thanks for taking my call. I guess I want to comment on the one of the last comments that sort of consciousness will take us into the next wave of support for green building, and that as we all learn more about it as good practice, whatever, that we'll move forward and it will become standard. And I think that's a nice idea, but I'm not sure it's true. It might go back to a comment that Dennis Rooker made last week, is that, you know, the local lawmakers have very little control over how things get built, and they actually have less power than the developers because their buddies are all in Richmond making decisions. And I mean, we've seen in California that the government can have a pretty impressive influence on the green building movement, but I think for Virginia and for a lot of states, you know, it just gets wrapped up in red tape and it ultimately fails, and probably developers don't feel like messing with it just because there's a lot of resistance to it. So I think, I'm definitely in support of it, and I'd love to see it go through, and I've seen the growth of consciousness around it, but I guess I'd like to hear maybe from the developer or some of the UVA professors about how it's being thwarted and maybe how we can speed it up so that it doesn't take decades to kind of have the next generation take it over, and how maybe we can see it come to fruition sooner.
All right, Andrew, thanks for calling, man. Keep listening.
Well, I think quickly, as we're running out of time, but I do think it's a very political issue. And so maybe, you know, it's just being more active in the way that we select who we're going to be running and who we're voting for, and really holding them to task. And then, you know, I think it is slow, but there are ways. When we were living in Massachusetts, we saw that building code start to change, and that was something they could control. They started to put in measures for better insulation, better R values, meaning less energy used. Virginia hasn't gone through that process yet, but there are places that politicians can start to sort of infuse some of the structure that's already in place. But then I agree, we need a lot more to happen. And maybe that's just for the population to get more involved. And luckily in Charlottesville, I think we're a bit ahead of the curve in terms of maybe some of the other areas in Virginia. So maybe we do take it a little for granted that this is happening, you know, when there actually are all these roadblocks.
All right. I'm going to toss out this last question, and I don't expect you to be able to answer it in any way other than maybe throw out some web links, because I think this is, you know, again, for the little bit of time we have left. The caller wanted us to touch on polyisoprene. Is that the proper pronunciation of that? And different products that are out there to insulate homes. So I don't know if there's a, you know, a building web area or something that you can mention.
I'm not sure what polyisoprene is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with expanded polystyrene, and that's EPS is what makes up our insulated concrete form. So that's what I know about. When we talk about sustainability, recycling, and so forth, I do want to point out that my company encourages that any waste that comes off of your job site be sent back to them. They'll completely recycle it. The other thing I do is I encourage customers that when they're building with ICFs, if they have to trim off pieces of it to make a block fit, put it in your interior walls. That gives you a little bit of sound buffering and a little bit of insulation on your interior walls, and it doesn't go to the landfill.
All right, well, we're out of time, unfortunately, because I feel like we could keep going for quite some time with calls and just the questions on my list. I want to thank Mark Greenfield, subcontractor specializing in the ICFs. Deb Brown, who works with the company that produces the ICFs. Betsy Redker, professor of architecture at the university. Bob Penio, a local architect and developer, for giving up your hour here on Sunday, answering a lot of good questions. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having us.
Don't forget www.podcast.com, and we'll do our best to get some web links out there for you to learn more about it. George is up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake-Up Call, only on WNRN.